A green nebula in space. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Pictures presents a Frank Mancuso Jr. production. A Roger Donaldson film. Green letters form the title, Species. A Starry Night Sky, starring, in alphabetical order, Ben Kingsley. Michael Madsen. Alfred Molina. Forrest Whitaker. Also starring Mark Helgenberger. Whip Hubley, Michelle Williams. And introducing Natasha Henstridge. Casting by Amanda Mackay, CSA, and Kathy Sandridge, CSA. A radio telescope is pointed towards the night sky. Cell designed by H.R. Giger. Creature and special makeup effects created by Steve Johnson. Associate producer, Mark Egerton. Executive producer, David Strait. Music by Christopher Young. Costume designer, Joe I. Tompkins. Visual effects supervised by Richard Edlund. Editor, Conrad Buff. Production designer, John Muto. Day breaks over the radio telescope. Written by Dennis Feldman. Produced by Frank Mancuso Jr. and Dennis Feldman. Directed by Roger Donaldson. For the past 30 years, the world's most powerful radio telescopes have been scanning the heavens, searching for signals from alien civilizations. This project is called SETI, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. US government laboratories, Dugway, Utah. A girl of about 13 wakes up and opens her eyes. She looks around and finds she is in a glass isolation cell within a government facility. Scientists in white biohazard suits work outside the cell. Some men in suits look down from a viewing gallery. Amongst them is Xavier Fitch, a middle-aged man with close-cropped hair. The girl gets off her bed and walks over to the glass wall of the cell. She looks back at Fitch, and the ghost of a smile crosses his face. The white-suited scientists begin to withdraw from the room, and the girl looks up at Fitch. In a corridor, a couple of the scientists carry two cylinders of compressed cyanide gas. They take them into the room containing the isolation cell. The girl watches as the scientists plug hoses from the gas cylinders into her isolation cell. She looks increasingly alarmed and bangs on the window. She turns around and looks pleadingly up at Fitch.
I'm sorry.
The girl mouths something back to him. Fitch nods to the scientists, who turn the gas on. The gas floods into the cell and the girl bangs on the glass as Fitch watches, apparently impassively, a tear rolls down his cheek. The girl becomes more agitated as the white cyanide gas starts to fill the isolation cell. Fitch turns away, passing two other men in suits as he goes over to a monitor. The suits, Fitch's aides, watch uncomfortably as the girl disappears in the rising gas. Suddenly, the girl's fist smashes one of the glass panels of the isolation cell.
She's breaking out!
Fitch presses an alarm button. The girl jumps through the shattered window and runs off, apparently unaffected by the gas. She passes the scientists, who are dying from its toxic effects. She runs down the corridor and bursts through a door, taking her outside. She races to a chain-link fence topped with barbed wire and begins to climb it. Some armed guards run after her.
No! What are we looking for? Come on, open the fence!
The men have dogs with them. The girl jumps over the fence and runs away across a field. A helicopter is scrambled. The guards shoot flares up into the sky to light up the field. The girl keeps running. Humvees and trucks full of troops join the search for the girl. She runs towards a freight train thundering along a track. Tentacles and limbs twist and writhe in a dark fluid. The girl wakes aboard the train and sees a hobo leering over her. She hurls him back and he smashes against the side of the carriage, breaking his back. The girl goes over to him and starts pulling clothes out of his bag. As dawn breaks, the helicopters and search parties are still out looking for the girl. The choppers fly over the railway line. They pass over Fitch and his two aides.
A couple of trains came through here around about the time she escaped.
You think she could have gotten this far in that time?
Is she that fast?
She's that fast.
The train rolls into a quiet station. A Stars and Stripes hangs over the platform and a few people stand around waiting with their bags. The girl looks out of the open side of the boxcar and waits for the train to come to a halt. Now, wearing the hobo's denim jacket over her pyjamas, she jumps down from the train and makes her way into the station. She wanders into a shop and looks over at someone paying at the till.
And this too?
$3.10.
$3.10?
Right.
The guy pays.
Here's your change.
Thank you.
Can I help you? The total $17.95.
A woman pays with a credit card.
Here's your card.
The clerk spots the girl.
Are you gonna buy those?
The girl puts the items back and hurries out of the shop onto the platform. She picks up a bag at random and boards the train, this time getting into a passenger carriage. As she takes a seat by the window, she hears the owner of the bag on the platform.
It's a brown tweed bag with leather trim, kind of like a duffel. You see it anywhere?
Sir,
the porter said he's going to bring it up and put it on the cart.
Well, this is the cart, but there's no bag.
As the train pulls out of the station, the girl opens the bag and takes out a small portable television. She puts the bag aside and turns the television on. Her expression varies depending on the tone of the material she's viewing.
Government authorities said this was the largest earthquake to strike an urban area in nearly 50 years.
He's right. Green lightning. Oh, that was Shorty Kincaid.
The girl walks up onto the observation deck of the train just as a steward and a couple of other passengers are leaving. Once they've gone, the girl goes over to some drawers and rips a locked one open effortlessly. She takes some money from inside it and shoves it in her bag. She goes on into the galley and takes a washing up brush and a scourer and puts those in the bag too. She takes some bananas as well. The steward makes his way towards the galley.
Excuse me?
The girl hides as the steward comes in. He gets some crockery and goes again. The girl opens the fridge and takes some cartons of milk from inside it. She returns to her seat where the portable TV is still on and begins eating a banana, skin and all.
Tickets, please.
The girl checks her pocket.
Oh, are you traveling by yourself?
She nods.
Are you 12?
The girl nods again.
Someone gonna meet you in Los Angeles? Well, we'll say that you're 11. That way you only have to pay half price.
The girl pays her some money, and the conductor gives her some change before winking and leaving. The girl goes back to eating her banana. That evening, Fitch and his two aides step into the boxcar containing the hobo the girl killed. They look at the crumpled body.
Can't believe our little girl did this.
She's not a little girl. DNA typing and material found in those wounds proves it was her.
She could be anywhere. Chicago, Las Vegas, Los Angeles, anywhere.
We should stop all the trains.
And have the railroad and local police ask a million questions we can't answer. We'll put key personnel at every stop along these lines. I want a team to track her. Hunt her down.
Good morning, Joe.
Hello.
Thank you for taking care of my cat.
We'll take very good care of you, little dork cat.
I won't be gone for very long.
Take care of yourself.
Preston Lennox goes.
Goodbye.
Are you still having problems with the people at work?
They point the finger at me saying, I'm the weird one. I'm the strange one. Why? Because I have feelings? Do they feel?
The 30-something Dan Smithson looks round.
There's someone at the door.
I won't answer that. Whoever it is, they can come back at the end of the hour.
That's for me.
Sorry I have to interrupt. We need your help, Dan.
I know. Gotta go.
Smiling Dan leaves his shrink's office. It's getting dark as the train continues down the track. A nightmare locomotive rattles along, huge mechanical jaws opening and closing on the machine as it goes. The girl flees from the train as it bears down on her. Huge metal spikes protrude from the front of it. A writhing mass of worms, the girl wakes with a start. She's still aboard the train. She eats from a pot of chocolate mousse with her fingers. She looks at the back of her hand and sees the skin pulse and swell as if something was moving under its surface. She goes into the loo and looks in the mirror. Her face is a mass of pulsating lumps. She looks down at her hand and sees the skin has actually split. Tentacles burst out of her face and body. They pull her into the corner of the room and continue to spread out from her, up the walls and ceiling, until she is engulfed in the squirming mass. Laboratories. 40-ish Preston climbs out of the chopper. A woman shows Preston into the observation gallery, where he finds Dan and another 30-something man and a woman already waiting.
Mr. Fitch will be with you all in just a moment.
She goes. Preston walks over to the other three.
Well, I guess we all must be here for the same reason. Whatever that is.
I'm Dan Smithson. And I don't know why I'm here either. But they say they needed me and that it was very important, so I came.
What do you do, Dan?
I'm an empath. Sometimes they show me awful things that people have done, and then I try to tell them why they did it.
What qualifies you for that?
I feel things deeply, that's all.
Preston nods.
What am I feeling right now?
Preston smiles. Dan pulls his beanie hat off.
You want to believe that nothing affects you, that you're not afraid of anything. But you're curious, just like the rest of us.
Stephen Arden, Harvard Anthropology Department, expert in cross-cultural behavior.
Laura Baker, hi, molecular biologist, hi. And who are you and what do you do?
Preston Lennox. And if I'm here, I think the shit has definitely hit the fan.
What exactly is your area of specialty, Mr. Lennox?
Let's just say I'm a freelance solution to some of our government's problems.
And what exactly might they be?
The kind that people don't usually like to talk about.
Dan nods.
You hunt people, don't you?
Dr. Arden glances at Laura. She looks apprehensively up at Preston.
I guess so.
On the train, the conductor walks along a corridor. She stops outside the girl's room and knocks on the door, then looks inside.
You in here, honey? It's a little late for the TV.
The place is a mess with food all over everywhere.
You in here, honey?
The conductor makes her way into the bathroom. She gulps as she sees a gigantic, pulsating cocoon hanging from the ceiling by numerous fibrous threads. The astonished conductor switches the light on and steps closer for a better look. Suddenly, a scaly talon shoots out of the cocoon and grabs her by the throat. The cocoon splits open, and a lithe, naked young woman in her early 20s forces her way out of it. Her body is covered in bloody mucus. She stands over the body of the conductor. The aides walk into the observation room ahead of Fitch. He addresses Dan and the others.
Good evening. I'm Xavier Fitch. I'm in charge of this operation. Will you sit a little closer, please?
The four get up and go and sit around Fitch's desk.
In November of 1974, a small group from SETI, S-E-T-I, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, used the radio dishes at Arecibo to send out a message to whoever might be listening. They sent about a quarter of a kilobyte, including structure of human DNA, map of our solar system, population of the Earth, you know, helpful facts like that. In January of 1993, Arecibo received a message back from an extraterrestrial unknown source.
That's great.
Intelligent life beyond this planet.
Yes. There were two distinct communications. The first message turned out to be a superior catalyst for methane. We now have the potential to produce an infinite amount of energy from this clean-burning fuel. This convinced us that we were dealing with a friendly intelligence. The second message turned out to be a new sequence of DNA with a rather friendly instructions on how to combine it with ours. Here's some technical data on the whole operation. You can get feedback on it from Dr. Baker here. Basically, the new combined DNA sequence was injected into 100 human ova.
He shows footage of the procedure.
We got 7 to divide. 4 petered out. 2 were stored in liquid nitrogen. And we allowed one to grow. That's his code name, their cell. It's after 2 hours. One day. 2 days.
My God.
This growth is amazing.
It's a week.
A fully formed fetus.
It's a girl.
Yes, I... We decided to make it female so that it would be more docile and controllable.
More docile and controllable, huh? Well, I guess you guys don't get out much.
That's her 1 month after she was born.
So you kept her caged in there?
We decided it would be safer to keep her in isolation.
She didn't like being locked up like that. She didn't like being alone like that.
Didn't she?
At a month, she looks like a regular four-year-old.
She's hiding something. Something inside.
You're right, Dan. This is 3 months after she was born, and you watch carefully.
What the hell was that?
Back the tape up.
The footage is replayed.
Watch her eyes. Rapid eye movement. She's dreaming.
She's having horrible nightmares.
It's some kind of anxiety reaction.
Got me a little anxious.
Well, it made the research team a little anxious, too, so the decision was made to terminate the experiment, to run more research so that we could determine what we were dealing with.
The cyanide gas.
You were going to gas her?
That was the decision.
It makes you feel bad. It makes you feel bad that you had to kill her, doesn't it?
I don't know.
They watch the footage of her escaping from the isolation cell.
Wow.
Yes.
She runs past the collapsing scientists.
Yesterday morning, the body of a transient was found in a boxcar in a siding near Salt Lake City. Preliminary DNA tests conclude he was killed by our creation, by our cell.
Have you found any other bodies?
No, we haven't, not yet.
You will? She's a predator. Her eyes are in front. Her eyes are in front so she can judge the distance to her prey.
That's right.
Where'd you learn that fact, Dan? I saw it on a documentary on the Discovery Channel.
I caught that show myself.
Mr. Lennox?
Yeah.
As the, the non-scientist amongst us, are you at all clear about what's going on here?
Oh, I think so. You created a monster with some kind of formula you got from outer space. The damn thing got away. Now you want us to hunt it down and kill it. Now, is that pretty close?
I guess.
Wait a minute. You don't want us to capture her alive so that we can study her?
Laura, I think this is strictly a search and destroy operation. Nobody ever asked me to find anything they didn't want dead.
I'm sorry for you.
Yeah, well, thank you, Dan. I'm sorry for her.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Welcome to Los Angeles, California. This is the terminal stop for the Desert Star. All passengers, please disembark.
The adult Syl, now wearing the conductor's uniform, steps off the train and walks away across the platform, looking keenly about her. She has blonde hair, blue eyes, and striking, even features. She passes some armed guards and a group of schoolchildren. A blonde girl looks up at her as she passes. Syl walks out into the main lobby and unimpeded makes her way out of the station. She walks along a crowded Los Angeles street. A helicopter comes into land beside a carriage from the train which has been isolated. Fitch and his newly formed team disembark from the helicopter and board the railway carriage. They make their way into the bathroom of the girl's room. Fitch holds a handkerchief to his mouth as he takes in the remains of the cocoon and the stripped body of the conductor.
Something bad happened here.
Oh shit, crushed her larynx.
She was afraid. She's scared.
Frightened.
Hungry, too, by the looks of it. She's been eating like a horse.
Well, our girl is definitely not on a diet.
Well, she must be storing up calories for something.
Any ideas?
Oh, my. Well, that's, that looks like some sort of chrysalis. Some kind of cocoon.
What are we looking for, a giant moth?
If that is a cocoon, she'll be fully grown now.
Fully grown?
Well, maybe that's how she got by our people. They were looking for a child.
She is a child.
It stinks in here. I'm going outside.
Dan puts his beanie hat on and follows the others outside. Preston talks to an aide.
Get the conductor's ID and credit card numbers on your computer. There's no sign of him on the train. Let's assume she took him with her.
I'll see to that. She kills if she feels threatened. And she has no remorse about it. No. Of course, Los Angeles is perfect for her. It's a city of the future. Anything goes. Totally mobile population, everyone's a stranger. Very little in this town is taboo or unacceptable. Whatever she does, no one's going to notice.
You're up?
Well, whatever. So,
Los Angeles is where the battle's going to be fought.
And won.
Still wearing the conductor's uniform, Syl walks along a street.
Right. Well, I've been waiting here for a second.
She stops outside a wedding shop and looks in the window. She goes into the shop and looks through a rack of wedding dresses. She selects one and holds it up against herself, admiring her reflection in the mirror.
You look very pretty.
She's now wearing it.
You have 100?
She pays for the dress.
Here we are. You ought to be more careful with your money. Not everybody's as honest as me.
Syl eyes the till.
Are you foreign?
Syl nods.
Do you speak English?
Yes.
Here, you keep this. Here, let me take this. Be careful here.
Yes.
Fitch and his team disembark from a van escorted by several Cadillac cars.
Washington.
Fitch glances at his watch as they walk into a hotel. A man in the lobby issues them with room keys as they walk to the elevators.
Our laboratory, Visitor Base 1, is being moved 2 blocks from here to some empty virus research labs at the university. They're moving our equipment as we speak. It'll be operational by 8 o'clock. Check into your rooms. Everyone out front in 15 minutes, we'll go on over.
What exactly are we going to do when we go on over?
Process the evidence we collected on the train.
Couldn't we try growing this creature with just its own DNA? We make up a version without including ours this time so we can investigate its vulnerabilities?
That'd be good. And I can know how it feels.
Makes sense. This human life form could be a mask. If we could see it without the camouflage...
You're right. Then at least we'd know what we were dealing with.
Syl walks down a busy street in the flamboyant wedding dress. She passes a guy in a wheelchair and he smiles over at her. She passes a pregnant woman, then passes a woman pushing twins along in a pushchair. Syl smiles, apparently enchanted. She walks on and stops outside a shop with a stuffed fox in the window. Moving on, she comes to another shop with a mirror in the window. She stops to admire her reflection. She crosses the street to the Saharan Motor Hotel and a car has to slam on its brakes to avoid hitting her. In the motel reception...
A couple of bozos just ran out. I got a customer coming. Yes, young lady, can I help you?
I want a room.
62, including tanks. That's just about cover the honeymoon suite.
He gave her a great fistful of bills. In her room, she presses a button on the TV remote control, and a program featuring a crashing car comes on. She changes channels. A guy's head pops up out of the sand on a beach.
Hi. Come here often? What's your sign?
She changes channels to a porn film. She watches uncertainly at first, then smiles. She changes channel again, this time to a hair dye commercial.
Tired of brunette? Change the color of your hair.
Up on a monitor.
Okay, I've just increased the magnification.
Laura uses a pair of joysticks to perform a macro operation on the cell.
When I pierce the cell, the foreign DNA will be introduced.
A needle is pushed up against the cell, but it has difficulty piercing it. Suddenly, the monitor goes black.
Shit! The camera's just gone down. Excuse me. Do you have a replacement camera?
We have a standby camera, but it will take some time for the technician to come by and replace it.
Oh, no. This happens in my lab all the time. It's a simple operation to replace it.
Are you saying you can do it?
Well, yeah, sure, I can. I just, you know, need somebody to give me a hand.
Well, I don't want technicians in there. This is classified.
I'll do it.
Man of action, I like that.
That's me.
Wearing white biohazard suits, Preston and Laura go into the room housing the cell and the alien DNA. They undo some catches on a glass case.
Can you get that one for me?
Fitch, Dan and Dr. Arden watch through a window as Laura disconnects the camera. She hands it to Preston and he gives her the replacement. She connects it up. Dan shakes his head as he watches through the window.
Something's wrong.
The monitor comes back on, showing the cell has turned black and is dividing.
Christ, it started already. It started already, get the top back on.
What?
Laura, press, get the top back on.
Laura closes the glass case up.
She must have penetrated the cell before the camera went down.
Oh, what was that?
You drove the bolt. Find the bolt, get the top back on.
I'm looking, Fitch.
Can they hear me in there? Laura, press. Get the top back on, then I'm going to let you out of the room.
Where'd it go?
The cells multiply at super speed.
I think it fell through the grate.
Can you lift up the grate?
Black foam grows in the case.
This isn't going anywhere.
No, can't get it.
Press, you gotta get the bolt out from under the grate.
Can't get to it. The floor's welded down.
Oh, my God. Press. Oh, my God, I've never seen anything like
this. Holy shit. I can't let them out of the room.
Press, look.
Come on. Press, get us out of here.
Open the goddamn door.
I can't let you out. Can I
open the door now.
You gotta let him out.
Can't do that. Open up the fucking door.
Let us out.
Tell me he's gonna stop growing, Dan. Let him out.
Open up the door.
Press.
What the fuck is that? Lock. Get to the other door. Let her out, bitch.
Can't let her out, Press.
Let her out.
I can't do that.
You motherfucker.
What's wrong with you? Let her out.
You gotta let them out, bitch.
Get hold of it. It's breaking
out. Get out of the way. Get her out, bitch. Get out of the way!
The creature in the case is zapped.
What is this thing? What is
it? Can't destroy it in 2 minutes. I'll have to burn the whole room.
What?
I have to burn the whole room. You got less than 2 minutes to kill the thing.
Disconnect the gas line in the isolation box. Use it as a flamethrower.
The squid-like creature flees from the flames.
Get the table!
Get
the
table!
Get the
table! Laura, watch out!
Hey!
Open the door!
Send the pipe!
Open the door!
Stop!
Stop! Stop!
Preston grabs a metal pipe.
1 minute remaining.
Preston repeatedly stabs the tentacled critter with the pipe until it lies still.
Laura, stop moving. I think I killed it. It's dead! Open the door!
It's dead, Fitch. Let them out.
Fitch's finger hovers over the button.
Oh, God. It's not dead.
It grows bigger and bigger behind some metal pipework. Preston and Laura back away.
Oh, shit.
What are we gonna do?
30 seconds remaining.
There's not much time. We gotta get out of here.
Something's better now. You gotta let him out. You can't do that. It might escape. I have to follow protocol.
What protocol?
Protocols by which we're running these experiments.
15, will you tell them that before they went in there?
13. 12.
Let them out.
11. 10.
Bitch! Let them out!
I have to follow protocol.
Let them out, bitch! Go!
Preston and Laura get out.
2, 1.
I hope you realize I had no choice.
Yeah, sure.
The protocol to burn the room in 2 minutes if anything went wrong.
The room fills with flames, incinerating the creature. In her motel room, Syl stands naked apart from her underpants. She picks up a bra and examines it. Later, now dressed in a pair of jeans and a mauve t-shirt, she goes to see the guy in the motel reception desk.
Where's a good place to find a man?
Well, there's plenty of guys at the Inn around the corner. It's a club. You won't have any trouble meeting somebody there.
Thank you.
Can't miss it. Just look for the long line. Oh, hey, I need your credit card. For room incidentals, long-distance calls, damage to the room, so forth. Credit card? Zip-zap? Plastic? American Express? Visa? MasterCard? There you go. Thanks. All right. Angel. Oh, hey, wait a minute. Hey! Hey! You don't want this falling into the wrong hands.
No.
He gives her the card back. In his hotel room, Preston watches an ice hockey game on television. He answers the phone.
Yeah. The conductor's stolen credit card has turned up at a motel in Hollywood. The van's out front. Let's go.
The van speeds off. A bouncer beckons a couple from a long line of punters into a nightclub. Syl walks along beside the line.
Joyce. You, legs. You're in. Come on.
Syl walks into the club. The bouncer stares after her. Inside, a woman swings on a trapeze above the dance floor. Syl stares up at her and smiles. She looks over at a wall of screens, then spots a couple of go-go dancers up on a podium. A guy intercepts her as she walks along.
Hey, hey, where are you from?
I'm foreign.
You're what?
I'm foreign.
Foreign, really? What? Easy.
I've got a party to go to and no one to take me.
I'll take you.
You will?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna go to the little girl's room. You wait right here. I'll be right back.
I'll be right here.
The party girl heads off. Syl follows her. Party girl trots into the ladies and checks her appearance in the mirror. Syl walks in behind her as she adjusts her cleavage.
Whatever it takes, right?
Okay, I'll spare another floor.
She goes into a cubicle. Syl steps to the door.
Bloody.
As party girl sits on the loo, a scaly talon smashes through the wall and rips her spine out of her back. The van pulls up outside the motel, and Fitch and his team get out. They view security camera footage from the hotel reception.
Can't see much on that.
Get this tape back to the lab, enhance it. Let's see if we can get a better look at her.
She looks nice.
Do you have any idea where she went?
I'll find her.
She wanted to know where she could meet a man. I sort of suggested a club called the Id around the corner.
Get the tape.
The desk clerk hands it to an aide. In the club, the go-go dancers do their stuff. Syl walks through the crowd and pulls her t-shirt off. She tosses it to a man, then joins another man at the bar. He looks like his birthday and Christmas have all come at once.
I've got a party to go to and no one to take me.
Where is this party?
I don't know.
A woman finds the remains of party girl in the loo. Fitch's van pulls up outside the club. Preston and the others run into the club past the bouncers. They go into the loo and find the body. Syl is in a BMW convertible with her date. She watches carefully as the guy starts it and puts it into gear.
Nobody leaves the club and I mean nobody!
A helicopter hovers over the club.
There's always some action in this part of town.
Later, the BMW makes its way through some automated gates and up the driveway of a private house. In the club, Preston talks to the bouncer.
Blue-eyed blonde, black leggings, pink sweater, 5'10" tall. Who'd she leave with?
Blue-eyed blonde leaves with a guy. It's hardly news around here.
Just name the top attractions, the regulars, no losers.
You should assume he's socially adept. You'll be hopping around.
Looking for a friendly guy, not a total asshole.
I'm thinking. Robbie left with a blonde.
That's...
Come on, let me show you the rest of the house.
Oh, I'm still sweaty from that place. So crowded.
Robbie and Syl come in from looking at the pool. He snaps his fingers.
Like it?
Yes.
I feel like a shower. You want one? Tell you what, I'm gonna take one. Wanna get in and take one later? No problem.
He disappears into the bathroom. Syl follows him and stops outside the shower cubicle. She watches him wash himself down. He spots her and wipes away condensation from the glass shower screen. He smiles at her and she smiles back. Robbie steps out of the shower and tells himself off. Syl watches as he pulls on a pair of tracksuit bottoms. He picks up the bath towel and walks over to her.
Take off your clothes. I want to see you.
She undoes her bra and slips it off, exposing her breasts.
Very nice.
She steps towards him and he caresses her face. She looks uncertain and backs away from him.
Can you drive me back?
What are you talking about? You knew what we came here for.
I've changed my mind.
All right. You said no. It's duly noted. Come here.
I said I want to go.
Too late, babe. You're not leaving. I said you're not leaving.
He grabs her.
All right.
That's better.
He leans forward and they kiss. Robbie's eyes suddenly widen in alarm. Syl grips his head and her tongue bursts through the back of his head in a spray of gore. Preston leads a SWAT team up a path to Robbie's house. The SWAT team go round the side of the house while Preston climbs up onto a decked area where the pool is. He crouches behind a sun lounger and surveys the house. In the shower, Syl rinses Robbie's blood off her face and mouth. Pistol at the ready, Preston makes his way into the house. He walks through the living room and heads down a corridor. He looks into a room and sees Robbie lying on the floor, a pool of blood spreading from the back of his head. Preston goes over to the bathroom door and opens it. The room is full of steam, but there is no sign of Syl. Later with Fitch.
What's happening? Kills a girl at the club, comes home with this guy, kills him.
Well, I'd say she fits the classic definition of a psychopath. She's got nothing to inhibit her. No moral sense, no social structure.
Well, she wasn't exactly smothered with a mother's love or taught good manners, you know what I mean?
I asked what was happening.
He did something to her. She was angry.
She'll kill if she feels threatened. She'll kill anyone that gets in her way.
Gets in her way of what?
Her life cycle. I think she's trying to mate. Reproduce.
Okay. So why did she kill the girl at the club?
Sexual competition.
She's pretty hard on the competition.
And now she's managed to mate.
Doesn't look like a successful mating to me. Still got his pants on.
She's frustrated.
Who isn't?
What is her problem? He was here, she was here.
All right, maybe she rejected him. She probably has some special kind of senses. Rats can sense diseased or genetic damage in their potential mates. So we can test his body for any hereditary diseases, any defects that would have made him a loser, essentially.
Needles. Maybe he was some kind of a doper, a diabetic.
Yeah, well, either way would have made him unacceptable. Excuse me. All right.
She finds a drug bottle.
Insulin. Diabetic. There you have it.
Well, she could have just walked out. Why did she have to kill him?
Well, I guess he pissed her off.
Some men don't like to be rejected. They get insistent.
Put an APB out in this guy's car.
It's already happened.
We'll go back to the motel. I want to check it out thoroughly.
More docile and controllable, huh, Fitch?
Fitch chooses to ignore the comment. Syl drives up outside the motel. Seeing a large contingent of SWAT there, she drives on. In Syl's motel room.
What do you think, Dan?
What do I think? I think she'll want to be alone right now. I don't think she's going to want to come here with all these cars lined up out front.
Well, you are assuming that you could find her way back here.
She could.
What is it?
Maybe menstrual blood. She's menstruating. She's definitely capable of reproduction.
Yes, I know.
Tentacles and spinal columns swirl about. They belong to some nightmare creature with a long tail and scaly talons. The image flickers. The creature appears to be swimming somewhere dark. Syl is asleep in the BMW. She seems disturbed and wakes with a start. She sits up and sees she's parked near a beach. She starts the car and accidentally turns the windscreen wipers on. She gets the car in gear and drives away. Now, looking happier, she drives the car along a quiet road near the sea. The car runs out of petrol. Looking puzzled, Syl coasts to a halt. She gets out of the car and walks off. As she crosses a pedestrian crossing, a guy on a skateboard whistles at her. A motorist swerves to avoid hitting the skateboarder and smashes into Syl, knocking her through a bus shelter. The driver panics and speeds off. A guy in a red Mustang convertible stops and checks on Syl. He runs back to his car and dials on a mobile the size of a house brick. A police officer discovers the abandoned BMW at the side of the road. He looks at the car's fuel gauge and sees it's on empty. Fitch and his team look at the CCTV footage of Syl from the reception of her hotel.
The video enhancement is not all that great.
How old do you think she is? 20? 23?
Her reproductive system should be fully developed.
Her biological clock must be in hyperdrive.
She wants to have a baby.
Well, if she manages to have a child, our problems have just started. And if her offspring's male, and it develops at the same accelerated rate as Syl, it could be capable of reproduction in less than 6 months. God knows how many females it could impregnate.
Fitch?
Fitch takes a phone call.
You see, when a predatory species is introduced into a closed ecological system, the extinction of the weaker species is inevitable.
They found the murdered guy's BMW, ran out of gas in Santa Monica.
And what is her name?
I don't know her name.
So who are you?
Well, you know, she didn't have any ID on her, so I just thought I'd come by to make sure she was okay.
You think she's got insurance?
I don't know. Here, just put it on my credit card for the time being.
And you don't know her name. Guys like you are hard to find.
It's the guy from the red Mustang. In a hospital room, medics attending to Syl.
Get a lab workup on that stat. Arrange to get her up to x-ray. I want an x-ray on this. It looks like a scapular fracture.
Syl tries to look at her shoulder. The doctor watches in amazement as her heavy bruising starts to disappear.
Your shoulder. What's going on here?
The bruising vanishes and Syl sits up.
Doctor, we need you immediately. A child burn victim just came in.
What is going on here?
Doctor, please.
Jesus Christ, did you see her shoulder?
Doctor, please, we need you immediately.
The doctor gawps after Syl, who walks off, apparently none the worse for wear. The Mustang driver spots her as she walks into the reception.
You're okay.
I'm okay.
Well, I was sure you were seriously injured.
I'm okay.
You are, it's a miracle.
Can we go?
Did the doctor say you could go?
Yes.
Yeah, we're looking at it. We'll send somebody over there. Thanks a lot.
By the abandoned BMW.
Reports come in. Doctor over at Park Bay Hospital called it with a weird story. We should check it out. It's only a couple miles from here.
Laura, press, take a car, check it out.
Park Bay Hospital?
Yeah, Park Bay.
Dan's in the car.
She walked. She walked. She walked that way.
Not too long ago.
Syl and the Mustang driver are back at his house. Syl crouches by a hot tub and puts her hand in the water.
Got some fruit and cheese here.
She walks over to him.
What is that?
What do you mean, the hot tub?
Hot tub.
I love this place. It's away from the traffic and the business and all the people. Sometimes it feels like you're not in L.A. anymore. Here. We'll immortalize the moment.
He sets a Polaroid camera on timer and puts it on the table, then goes and stands beside Syl. She regards the camera apprehensively.
Look at the camera.
She does, but recoils when the flash goes off.
This girl literally reformed her bone structure.
It's her.
Who checked her in?
I don't know. Let's find out.
She had no insurance, so this guy put it on his own credit card. Here's the file. John F. Carey.
You haven't got a driver's license, home address, social security number, anything like that?
No, sir. I only got an imprint of his credit card. That's the only information I have.
Can you give us a printout of whatever you've got?
No problem.
Some candy?
Laura takes a sweet and Preston smiles. Later, they sit in a car, and Laura types John's details into a computer.
All right, it's addressed in the Palisades, and he's got a phone number.
Tell Fitz where we're headed and try to get John Carey on the line.
Laura dials a number on her mobile as Preston drives them away. John, now wearing swimming trunks, walks over to the hot tub carrying a towel. Syl is already naked in the tub. John drops his towel down on a chair and joins her in the water. They embrace and start to kiss. John looks a little taken aback.
I better get the phone.
As he makes to get out, she grabs him and pulls him back. They start kissing again.
I've got his machine. Should I leave a message?
Yeah. Tell him he's about to copulate with a creature from outer space.
Copulate, huh?
Yeah.
I like you.
I know.
John and Syl kiss hungrily in the hot tub.
It's not too soon for us to be together.
No, it's not too soon.
You don't need these.
Oh. Hey, that's a little fast. Whoa!
She pulls his trunks off. Laura and Preston drive up outside John's house.
Whoa.
What's the matter?
Take it easy.
Syl kisses John again.
Just relax. There's plenty of time.
Laura and Preston walk up to the front door and Preston tries the door handle. In the hot tub, Syl looks round sharply.
What is it?
Preston peers through a window.
Oh, no, I think someone's at the door.
Don't go. Please. I want a baby.
What? Excuse me?
John makes to go, and she grabs him, pushing and holding him under the water. Her expression hardens, and lumps and ridges appear on her face.
Let's go around the side.
Laura and Preston head off round the house. In the hot tub, Syl's pupil changes shape from round to elliptical, like a reptile's. Her skin has become scaly, and spines protrude from her back. She holds John under the water and slips a tentacle around his neck. Preston peers in through a window. He draws his gun, a Glock automatic, and opens a sliding patio door. In the hot tub, the tentacle forces its way into John's mouth, as Syl, now an amphibious humanoid monster, holds him under the surface. Preston shakes his head. He looks back at Laura as they creep through the house. They move on and arrive at the hot tub. John's body floats down in the blood-red water. Preston and Laura exchange a look. Preston crouches down and moves to the door. He looks outside. The coast appears to be clear, so he steps out with Laura following him. Preston walks on ahead, picking his way through undergrowth in the garden. A night mist lies low on the ground. Preston stops and looks around. He moves on, pausing every so often. He's being watched from cover by Syl, who is still in amphibian mode. Preston gets to the fence at the end of the garden and climbs up it. He grabs hold of a low tree branch and looks out into the night. Laura steps away from the house and begins to walk through the garden. She stops and a squirrel leaps from a tree onto her shoulder. Preston runs back to her and the rest of the team emerge from the house.
What happened?
Squirrel! The fucking squirrel!
She was here.
Yeah, she was.
I want to make sure she's not still here.
Dan stands looking around the garden. Fitch and Dr. Arden go over to the hot tub and look at the body. A helicopter hovers overhead. As Dan looks around the garden, he's watched from cover by Syl. As she watches him, she morphs back from amphibian to human. Dan walks away and she hurries off.
Perhaps we should check the body for any evidence that they've had sex.
Fitch nods. Dr. Arden goes and Dan walks over to Fitch. He looks down at the body.
I used to be scared of the sight of blood. Now I guess I'm getting used to it.
Fitch stares wide-eyed at Dan and goes. Still naked, Syl runs up outside a convenience store and crouches behind a hedge. She watches as a woman carries a bag of groceries to her car. She unlocks the car with her remote and puts the groceries in the boot. The woman gets into the car and Syl leaps into the passenger seat beside her.
Hey!
You gotta help me, please!
Oh my God, what's the matter?
We found this in the living room.
The Polaroid.
She liked him.
Preston looks at it.
No, not enough. Can't see any more on that than we did on the video monitor. He didn't get a very good picture of her, did he?
Criminologist says there's no evidence of semen in the hot tub water.
Well, maybe she took it with.
So she probably hasn't managed to mate.
We interrupted her.
Yes, I think we did. Give me something I can use.
What have you come up with lately, Fitch?
Syl drives up outside John's house in the woman's car.
She's not scared of us. That's for sure.
The team look around.
We're all beat. We'll go back to the hotel, get some rest.
Tomorrow night, we'll go back to the club.
Stake it out.
Syl is reading his lips.
She's not stupid. She's not going to repeat herself. There's little point going back there. It provided such a poor specimen. I'm not so sure.
Look, she's been in the city 2 days. It's what she knows. And I'd rather try the club than sit around the command center reminiscing about how close we got.
Syl watches as they get in their cars and drive off. Preston and Laura drive together.
She would make one excellent biological weapon. Someone out there thought we were some kind of galactic weed that was going to spread through the universe.
So what you're saying is that she's the cure with the disease.
It's well said.
Baker, Laura, 1735 Meander Drive, Simi Valley, California. That's you, right?
Last time I checked.
What do you do for kicks out there in Simi Valley?
Oh, pine for guys like you.
That's what I thought.
They follow Fitch's van down into the hotel's underground car park. Syl has been tailing them in the woman's car. She stops and watches the vehicles disappear into the car park. Fitch and his team walk through the hotel lobby.
So, anyone hungry?
No, thanks. I'm beat. I'm just going to try to get some sleep.
Night.
Yeah, night. I'll have something to eat with you. Thanks, Dan.
Dr. Arden goes and Dan smiles to himself. Preston walks over to the elevators reading a newspaper. He presses the lift call button. The doors open and he steps inside. As the doors close, Syl steps up outside the lift. A door opens and light spills from it. Preston steps through the doorway and takes his jacket off. Syl is waiting for him. She extends her hand to him as he takes his shirt off and smiles at her. The amphibian-like alien creature moves in dark water. Flames leap up. Syl wakes up in bed. Tied up beside her is the woman whose car she hijacked. Syl sits up and pulls a gag away from the woman's mouth.
Do you ever have nightmares?
Yes. Please untie my hands. I wouldn't hurt you, please.
I have them.
Syl's face is flushed and sweaty.
I think they tell me who I am.
Why are you doing this to me?
I don't know why I'm here. I don't know who I am, who sent me. Do you?
No!
The woman struggles.
Why do you think you're here?
I don't know! Please let me go. Please let me go.
Syl looks up thoughtfully.
I wouldn't hurt you. I promise. I wouldn't hurt you.
Yes, you would. You just don't know it yet.
No, I wouldn't. Please. My hands are hurting me. Oh, thank you.
Syl gets a pair of secateurs and cuts her own thumb off with them. Syl picks up the severed digit and puts it in a handbag. The woman watches aghast as sinews and muscles regenerate quickly, reforming the missing thumb as if nothing had happened. Syl tries snipping off one of the woman's thumbs. Syl leaves the woman's house with her unwilling hostess's thumb wrapped in some bloody tissue. She walks over to a dustbin and drops the severed digit inside it. She gets in the woman's car, a Ford station wagon, and puts the handbag on the seat beside her before driving off. She drives along a quiet palm-lined road in the hills and pulls over at the roadside. She looks around, then drives up an unmetalled track in front of her. She stops again and gets out of the car, leaving the engine running. She looks down the hillside. Some way down the slope, she spots an electrical junction box with danger high voltage written on the side of it. At a gas station, Syl fills several large jerry cans with fuel. She drives along a quiet road, then stops. She gets out of the car. At another gas station, she waits for a man to go and pay for his fuel, then gets in his blue car, starts it up, and drives off. She returns to the Ford station wagon and takes a jerry can of fuel from the trunk. Fitch and his team are waiting for Syl to appear. Dr. Arden and Dan sit at a table and look over at Preston and Laura chatting at the bar.
Laura and Preston, they like each other. They just don't like to show how they feel, you know?
What?
Laura and Preston, they like each other.
Yeah, whatever you say, Dan. Look, it's pretty smoky in here. I'm going to go outside, get a bit of air.
Okay.
I think I'll lie down in the back of the van and have a rest. This is a complete waste of time.
He goes over to Laura and Preston.
You get the feeling you're on a wild goose chase.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Dr. Arden makes his way through the crowd. Still at the table, Dan looks up as if he senses something. He gets up and walks through the crowded club. Fitch remains vigilantly watching the dance floor for any sign of Syl. Dan steps out of the club into a back alley. He crouches down and looks at the floor, then straightens up and looks around. He walks a little way down the alley and slowly makes his way past some dumpsters. A couple of winos pop up from between the dumpsters. Dan nearly jumps out of his skin. He waves apologetically to the two winos. As he turns, he comes face to face with Syl. He backs away, then runs back to the door of the club.
Hey! She's here! Hey!
Dr. Arden sits up in the van. Syl runs back to the blue car. She drives off with the woman tied up in the passenger seat. The others join Dan.
Get in the van! Everybody get in the van!
Preston and Laura get in their car. Everyone else gets in the van. They chase off after Syl.
They're heading into the hills. We'll need the helicopters.
Two helicopters appear and shine searchlights down on the road which snakes through the Hollywood Hills. Dan and Laura are not far behind Syl's car. As the cars race up the twisting road, Syl takes a hard left-hand bend. Fuel spills out of one of the open jerry cans in the back of the car, sloshing over the woman. As they race on, Syl makes an overtake, and Preston has to dodge an oncoming car.
Oh, watch it!
They drive on. More fuel spills from the jerry cans in the back of the blue car. Syl turns off up the unmetalled track. At the top, she turns the car down the hillside. Preston and Laura watch from the top as the blue car careers down the steep slope. Syl kicks the driver's door off the car and abandons the vehicle and her terrified passenger. The car collides with the electrical junction box and explodes in a gigantic fireball. Syl watches from cover as Preston and Laura watch from the top of the hill.
Oh my God.
Syl makes her getaway through the dark undergrowth. One of the helicopters launches three missiles at the burning car to make sure the occupants are properly dead. Another mighty fireball leaps up into the night sky. Syl makes it to a road and watches as a couple of fire engines go by. She gets into the woman's Ford station wagon and starts to drive away. The emergency services gather at the top of the hill. Fitch talks to one of his aides.
We blocked the road in both directions. The press is going apeshit. We've got to tell them something.
Well, you tell them what you want. You just don't tell them the truth.
I don't buy her showing up at the club like that. Too damn convenient.
Well, seeing is believing, or don't you trust your own eyes?
Get back! Get all these people back!
Bitch.
You heard him.
Bitch. Does it feel right?
Sir! We found what looks like a severed thumb in the pocket of one of the doors that got ripped off.
Hey, let me see that.
She may have caught it in the door trying to get out.
We'll get it over to the lab. If it's hers, it'll check out. It'll be genetically identifiable.
It's all over, everyone. Tomorrow you can go back to your lives. Congratulations on a job well done.
Fitch goes. His team look dubious.
Just like that, huh, Fitch?
I don't think so.
Back at the woman's house, Syl is in the bathroom. She's dyeing her hair brunette. She picks up some scissors and begins to trim her hair.
Hi, Sharp Ones. Leave me a message, okay? And Frank, are we going to dinner?
Fritch's team are in a club.
Waiter!
Well, I guess we won.
We won. Science lost.
I didn't think we'd get her this way. Not that easy.
You sound like you got to miss her.
Yeah, well, I guess I will. I think I respected her.
Dr. Arden nods.
Look, I know this has been a hellish job, you know, but I've really enjoyed working with you three, and seeing as Uncle Sam's buying the drinks, why don't we have another round? Eh? Waiter!
I don't drink, Arden.
Oh, don't worry, Dan, tonight you will.
You want to dance?
With me?
Yeah, you.
Preston smiles.
All right.
Okay. Dr. Arden looks fed up as they go onto the dance floor. Fitch walks through the club and takes a seat at the bar. He looks across the dance floor at Preston and Laura.
I know you don't have a family, so do you have a girlfriend in New York?
Well, I guess I've had a few, but they don't hang around very long. I guess I keep too many secrets.
You want to share one with me?
Right now?
They slow dance cheek to cheek.
Well, I know what you do, and it doesn't scare me.
Oh, really?
No.
Well, it does most people.
Preston spots a guy chatting to a blonde with her back to Preston.
I wouldn't want to never see you again.
Preston breaks away from Laura and marches over to the bar. He grabs hold of the woman.
Hey! Oh, what are you... I'm sorry. I thought you were somebody else. I'm sorry.
He backs away.
You okay?
I thought it was her. I thought it was Syl. I saw the blonde hair.
She's dead. The tests on the thumb proved it was her.
Yeah, well, you got your test, and I got my gut, and I just don't buy it.
Well, you want to know what I think? I think as long as you feel that she's out there, you got a mission. I mean, maybe you don't want this job to be over.
Uh-huh. Well, maybe not. So what?
Laura raises her eyebrows.
Thanks for the dance.
She goes, and Preston nods. Fitch watches him from the bar. Laura gets her bag and leaves. As Laura walks past the bar, Fitch calls over to her.
Nice.
Preston rejoins Dr. Arden and Dan. He gloomily sips a beer.
What do you call this? It's called a Long Island iced tea. It's got tea in it? Nope.
Preston laughs. Laura walks into the ladies and stares at herself in the mirror. She adjusts her hair as Syl, who's now a brunette, comes in. Laura takes some perfume from her bag and sprays some on her neck as Syl stands beside her.
Smells nice. Can I try some?
Help yourself.
She hands it to Syl, who squirts a bit on herself. Laura applies lipstick.
Does it work on your boyfriend?
Yeah, as a repellent.
Laura goes as three more women come into the ladies.
I think he's in remarkably good shape for a man his age.
In the hotel, Fitch walks over to the elevators and presses the call button. The left doors open and he steps inside. Dr. Arden gets another round of drinks.
One Long Island iced tea.
Dan grins and nods.
I like these cups of tea.
Wait, that's great. Wait.
Dan clinks glasses with Dr. Arden and Preston.
I like these cups of tea, man.
You guys are tired. Go to bed.
Laura goes. Preston looks fed up.
So?
Preston shrugs.
You on the bed?
I guess.
She still wants to see you, though.
Preston smiles and nods.
Maybe I'll go find out if you're right about that.
He gets up and goes. Dan pats Dr. Arden on the shoulder. In the hotel, Preston walks over to the elevators. He presses the call button. The doors open and he steps inside. He presses the button for the floor he wants, then holds the door as Syl walks up. She steps into the left beside him. He doesn't recognize her with her new hairdo.
Hate to be in one of these things during an earthquake.
Yeah. What floor do you want?
10, please.
He presses the button. He leans back against the side of the lift and frowns as he sniffs the air.
I like your perfume.
You do? Thank you.
Excuse me, I get out of here.
He steps out looking troubled. He walks away down the corridor. When he's gone a short distance, Syl steps out of the lift and hides in a doorway. He glances back but doesn't see her. He arrives outside Laura's room and knocks. Syl watches him. Laura goes to the door and looks through the spy hole. She's delighted when she sees it's Preston. Syl ducks back into the doorway as Preston looks round. Laura composes herself, then opens the door to Preston.
Hi.
Hi.
She smiles and stands aside for him. He steps into the room and hangs the Do Not Disturb sign on the door handle before closing the door. Laura stands with her back to the door.
Did you want something?
Maybe.
She smiles up at him and he leans over and kisses her. She puts her arms around him and they snog. Outside, Syl puts her ear to the door and listens. Preston pulls his jacket off and tosses it aside. Preston picks Laura up and she bumps against the door, making Syl jump on the other side. Syl listens as the couple fall onto the floor. Syl looks around and sees a maid approaching with a bunch of keys. The maid smiles over at Syl, who watches as she knocks on a door across the corridor.
Housekeeping!
In the club.
Dan. Those two over there. Bet they like unusual men like us.
Women think I'm strange. I don't feel well.
Be silly. Just go there and talk to them.
I have to go. And I think you should leave with me, okay?
I'm going to stay for a while, actually.
Okay.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Housekeeping.
Syl lets herself into the room next to Laura's. She checks no one's around, then goes and presses her ear up against the wall. In the club, Dr. Auden chats up two women at the bar.
Hi.
Hi.
I couldn't help noticing sitting over there. You know, I was wondering what two very intelligent, glamorous-looking women were doing without dates. Oh, my name's Stephen Arden, by the way. I teach comparative anthropology at Harvard.
Oh, I lived in Boston once.
Yeah?
For a year. Froze my butt off.
Yeah. I'm a cold in Boston.
This is Bill and Tony. I forget your name.
The girls' dates turn up, so Arden goes. Laura pulls Preston's socks off.
Stand up.
He gets to his feet. Laura moves forward and pulls down his boxer shorts as she kneels in front of him. In the next room, Syl leans back against the wall. As she closes her eyes, she has flashes of the alien amphibious creature. Dr. Arden walks up the corridor and unlocks the door to his room. It's the same room that Syl's in. They stare at each other in surprise.
How did you get in here?
I stole the key.
What?
I saw you downstairs, but you're with all those people. So I thought I'd come up and wait.
Whoa.
She unzips her dress.
This kind of thing doesn't usually happen to me.
She kisses him.
I just want to be with you.
Huh?
You are.
Arden quickly rips his jacket and shirt off.
Oh, yes.
He pulls Syl to him and they kiss urgently. She shoves him back onto the bed and he struggles to undo his trousers and kick his shoes off.
What about protection?
In his room, Dan lies on his bed, a book open on his chest. He suddenly sits up. He looks over at the TV. The same ad that Syl saw for hair dye is on. As Dan watches it, he gets a brief flash of the alien creature. Looking troubled, he gets up off the bed. In Arden's room, Syl straddles Arden as they have sex. She has a flash of the alien creature. Dan walks into his bathroom. He rinses his hands and face under the tap. As he looks at himself in the mirror, he has a flash of Syl and the alien creature. He turns the taps off.
She's here. She's here.
He marches down the hotel corridor and stops outside Dr. Arden's room. He approaches the door cautiously and rests his hands upon it. As he does so, he gets another flash of Syl and the alien creature. He changes his mind and steps away from the door. He goes over to Laura's door and knocks on it. Inside, Laura sits up.
Bruce. Someone's at the door.
Who's there?
Bruce. Laura.
Stan, I'm going to come to you.
Oh, Christ, what is he on?
Preston gets out of bed and pulls his trousers on. Dan glances nervously back up the corridor. Bleary-eyed, Preston opens up.
What's the problem, Dan?
I just got this terrible feeling. I just got this strange thought. You know, I got this image of Syl with Arden. Syl's next door to Arden, Preston.
No. She's dead, Dan.
You don't understand. I got real upset. So I went to his room and there's somebody in his room with him.
Did you knock on the door?
I knocked on the door, but I don't know what she'll do to him, you know? All I know is that they're making a lot of noise in there. Down to six. And I know it's Syl, Preston. I know it's Syl. I know it.
Okay. I believe you. I get dressed.
Another flash of the alien creature. Dr. Arden reaches a climax and lies back, Syl still straddling him.
Oh, I enjoyed that immensely.
He reaches up and touches Syl's face. She rubs his shoulders and chest. She looks down at her abdomen and smiles. Dr. Arden regards her quizzically.
I felt it.
What?
She smiles again.
It started.
What started?
Life.
Oh, my darling girl. I know in some cultures women believe they know the exact moment of conception, but really...
Don't you believe me, feel?
Spines begin to grow out of her back. She places his hand on her abdomen.
I hope you're right about this, Dan.
Preston barges the door open. Syl, in alien form, bursts into the corridor through the wall and runs off. Arden lies dead on the bed. They find the maid dead in the corridor.
Headed for the basement!
Take the stairs!
Laura, come with me! Come on!
Preston and Laura get in the elevator.
She's pregnant. We gotta get to her before she gives birth.
God, you don't know what we're dealing with here. She can have a dozen babies. She can lay 1,000 eggs.
Preston nods.
Did you see Arden?
Yeah, I did. I'm pulling that.
If they can make it, we have a trap. The fire doors can only be opened from the inside with the bat naked.
Then what?
Holy shit.
God.
Bitch went right through a steel door.
Preston shoots the back window out of their van and opens the door. He takes out some equipment. Fitch and Dan run into the basement.
You saw her!
She was gone before we got here.
You saw her! Look at the door! Which way did she go?
I don't know.
Where's Press?
Took off down the tunnel.
Toting a flamethrower from the van, Fitch leads Laura and Dan over to a bastion steel door. They go through it into a narrow tunnel beyond. They shine torches into the gloom ahead of them.
She kills if she feels threatened. She kills if she feels threatened.
Fitch leads the way down a metal flight of stairs. At the bottom, they spot a dead man lying on the floor up ahead of them. As they approach him, Preston steps out from round a corner, also carrying a flamethrower from the van.
She must have come through here.
They follow Preston, stepping over the dead guy as they go. They go on into a dark room and shine their torches about. They discover an open manhole in the floor.
She went down here. There's no other way.
Yeah, she's down there.
Let's go.
Stand back. I'll clear it out.
Preston crouches down and shoots a burst of flame into the open manhole. He then climbs down inside it. He emerges into a narrow pipe and crawls along it. Laura, carrying a machine gun, gets in next, followed by Fitch and then Dan. They come to a junction in the pipe, and Preston leads them to the left. They pass a sluice with wire mesh over the end of it. They come to the end of the pipe they're in, which has had the wire mesh cover on the end of it ripped open. They stop and regroup.
Which way do you think she went, Dan?
Think about it, for Christ's sake. You're supposed to have some extra sensory powers that can tell us the sort of thing. Which way did she go? Which way did she go, Dan? Which way did she go?
I don't know.
Which way did she go?
She went that way.
You think?
Well, that's good enough for me.
You think she went that way? You don't fucking know, do you? You don't fucking know.
I'm going this way, Dan.
You come with me. Come with me, Dan.
I think she went this way.
Preston and Laura headed off in the direction indicated. Fitch went in the opposite direction. Dan remains trying to gather his thoughts. He looks down at the water below the walkway he's on and notices bubbles rising. Fitch creeps along a walkway and arrives at a corner.
Dan?
He peers into the gloom ahead of him.
Dan?
Preston and Laura walk along a gantry above the water. Dan shines his torch on the bubbles in the water. The bubbles disappear. As Fitch advances, he also notices bubbles in the water below him. He watches them curiously. Syl, in alien form, leaps up out of the water, grabs him and pulls him in. Laura and Preston run back to Dan. Dan picks up Fitch's flamethrower and shines the torch attached to it on Fitch's body, which floats in the water. His face is a bloody mess.
I can feel her. She's that way. She's that way.
He looks up ahead, then back at the body.
I thought I'd want to kill something.
Bubbles rise in the water beside a walkway. They stop just before Dan, Preston and Laura pass by. Clinging to the pipes above the walkway is alien Syl. She watches as the remaining three team members pass by underneath her.
Hey.
Dan looks back.
It's this way. It's back here.
They head back the way they came. Syl, who now has an elongated cone-shaped head and green skin, watches as they pass underneath her. Once they've gone, she leaps down from the overhead pipes into the water. She swims rapidly away under the surface. Preston and the others run back but don't see her. Dan stops by a hole in the wall. Laura and Preston come back and shine their torches into the hole.
This must have opened up during the earthquake.
Okay, stand back.
Preston shoots a burst of flame into the aperture, then climbs into it. Somewhere up ahead, alien Syl is in labor. Preston leads Laura and Dan along a narrow passage within the rock. Syl screams in pain and clenches her talon. An aperture in her chest starts to open as she gives birth. Preston and the others continue through the narrow tunnel. Preston shoots a burst of flame ahead of them before they move on. Syl cradles her newborn in her scaly arms. Preston shoots another burst of flame ahead of him. The team emerge into a subterranean cavern with a lake in it.
Wow. Is that oil?
Looks like it.
A brown rat scampers along at the edge of the lake.
I'm gonna go on back through there and see if I can flush her out. If she comes back through here, let her have it.
Preston heads off alone. Dan climbs up the side of the cavern.
Dan.
He climbs on up. Laura stares apprehensively after him. Dan keeps going until he arrives at an overhanging ledge just above him. He shines his torch up at it and catches a glimpse of something moving. He pushes the flamethrower up onto the ledge and tries to pull himself up. He catches another glimpse of whatever it is, but has to let go of the ledge. He steps back from the ledge with the flamethrower and shines the torch on the end of it back up at the ledge. Again, he gets a glimpse of something moving up there. Dan climbs back down the side of the cavern. Once he's gone, the thing on the ledge emerges from hiding. It's a naked, slightly scaly boy, apparently about 2 years old. A rat scuttles along nearby. The boy spots the rat and watches it. The rat sees the boy and stops at a safe distance. The boy reaches out towards the rat, but it remains out of reach. Suddenly, the boy shoots out a long chameleon-like tongue, which skewers the rat. He eats the rodent. Dan crawls along a narrow fissure between the rocks. Laura climbs up the side of the cavern to find him. Dan has crawled by a back way to the overhanging ledge. He shines his torch ahead of him and sees the boy. The boy stares passively back at him.
Okay. It's okay. Nobody's gonna hurt you. You come here. Come on. I got you.
The boy shoots his tongue out at Dan. Laura slips into the oil lake.
Dan! I'm stuck! I need your help, I'm stuck!
The boy, now transformed into a hideous spindle-legged creature, leaps at Dan, who'd fallen off the ledge. Dan blasts him with his flamethrower. The blazing boy falls into the oil lake, setting fire to it. The flames begin to spread towards Laura. Syl appears at the side of the lake and roars. Preston hears her and heads back. Dan clings to the cavern wall above the lake.
Dan
dangles precariously above the blazing lake. Syl climbs the cavern wall. As Preston makes his way through a narrow fissure in the rocks, Syl looks down on him from above. She shoots a tentacle out of her breast, and it wraps around Preston's neck, hoisting him off the ground. The flames get closer to Laura. Preston continues to struggle with the breast tentacle. Laura manages to climb up out of the lake. Preston pulls a knife and cuts through the tentacle. He drops to the ground and pulls the writhing breast tentacle offcut from around his neck. Laura climbs towards Dan, who hangs on for grim death. Preston picks up his knife. Syl jumps down in front of him and he draws his pistol. He empties the clip into Syl, knocking her back. She falls down into the flaming lake and burns alive. Desperate, Dan tries to pull himself up to safety. Laura and Preston hurry to his aid.
Hang on! Oh my God, Danny!
I got you!
I got you, Dan, hang on!
They grab hold of his arms and begin to drag him to safety. Suddenly, Syl jumps up out of the lake and grabs hold of his ankle. As Syl tries to drag Dan down, Preston loads a shell into a large caliber gun. He aims it at Syl's head.
Duck your head!
Let go, you motherfucker.
It blows Syl's head off. The headless corpse falls into the lake of fire as Dan is pulled to safety.
I thought I was dead.
They look down at the blazing lake.
I thought you drank your last Long Island iced tea there, Dan.
Yeah, I thought we all had. Hey, you okay?
Yeah, I'm okay. My pants a little messed up, but I'm okay.
She was half us, half something else. I wonder which was the predatory half.
The dead half. Let's get the hell out of here.
They hurry away back to the fissure in the rock. Preston pauses and looks back at the flames rising from the lake for a moment before following the others. A rat scampers over the rocks. It finds the offcut of breast tentacle and drags it away. Laura and the others arrive back in the sewer they set out from.
I never thought I'd be so happy to be back in a sewer.
They make their way back along the walkway. The rat that ate the breast tentacle sees another rat approaching. It opens its mouth and shoots a tentacle out of it, spearing the other rat. ITFC audio description by John Walskill and Tim Cashmore.